My name
is Sheila Jackson. I am a Unitarian. I love being a Unitarian. I am proud to call myself a Unitarian. Even when I felt reticent about answering the question so often asked in the South, what church do you go to? I thought I was a proud Unitarian. But somehow I hedged and called the fellowship my church when confronted with that question. I would say whatever I thought I needed to say to cut off further inquiry into my religious status. Some years ago, someone said to me, "But they don't believe in God." And instead of saying, "Well, Unitarians don't have to believe in God, they can if they want to. We don't have a creed that says we have to believe in God," I just said, "That's not true. So do I really have the courage to say that I'm a Unitarian? Or is there some little voice deep inside of me that says, be careful. You could be burned at the stake or tied to a rock and dumped in a lake for blasphemy or witchcraft." Well, of course, that's not true. But there is sort of a prevailing culture that has a bit of strength in most areas of the United States that says, just don't upset anybody. It's a Christian culture. But you can imagine back when the church was everything, when the church was all powerful, and if you were to say anything the church said was not true, you could be burned at the stake or dropped in a lake tied to a rock. Then the priest did not just pray for you and ask you to come to his church to listen to his message of salvation. He took you to the church court. And you were probably found guilty of heresy, and then things were not going to turn out too well. That was a given. Needless to say, there weren't very many people who spoke up. Heretics were not necessarily non-Christian. They were just non-illogic. Copernicus and Galileo discovered through rigorous scientific method that the Earth was not the center of the known universe. That the only way they could explain the phenomena that they observed was to say, you know, I think the Earth is moving. Whatever the church says, I think the Earth is actually moving. Well, Copernicus did not actually have the nerve to say that the Earth was moving. He said, hey, you know, I'm looking up there, and what I see makes me think the Earth is moving. But, you know, it's up to you, the church fathers, to say whether or not you agree with that. Well, he wrote a book in Latin. The title of the book was Revolutions of the Heavenly Bodies, and he had the nerve to publish it. Fortunately, he died before the church got it together and did something about it. While the church was diddling around in the late 1500s and early 1600s about how to deal with this book and the body of this man, and then how to kill the ideas in the book, an Italian fellow named Galileo Galilei read the book. And he thought it made sense, and it agreed with what he was seeing. So the church had a really big problem because they had another heretic. They were having internal problems, and they didn't deal with it right away. So Galileo had a chance to write this little play about people having a debate about whether or not the earth was moving. He devised a dialogue between debaters on the subject, but still the Holy Fathers took offense. But he had written this book in the vernacular, so it was out there. People were reading it. So now the church had a real problem. They did call Galileo on the carpet. He was tried by the Inquisition and, of course, found guilty of heresy in 1633. He recanted as under his breath he said, "But I'm right." So the church sent him to his home on house arrest, and he died there in 1633. Now, slowly through the ages, the wheel of the church creaked through the decades and the centuries. In 1820, the church allowed Joseph Settle to express an opinion about this heliocentrism. 1992, Pope John II was allowed to say the church had maybe treated Galileo a little unfairly. In modern times, fundamental Christians hold in faith that the earth is 6,000 years old, and that the theory of evolution is heresy because of a monk's interpretation of the lifetimes of the descendants of Adam and Eve as put forth in the book of Genesis. There are debates about it. We are tortured by the ignorance of a group that inflicts its unfounded faith on the national discourse and by the power it has to impose such views into the governing structure of the nation. But still, we can walk forward and say, that doesn't make any sense. Let's look at it logically. So that is heresy as defined by religious fundamentalism. But there is more to heresy than that. It is possible, and happens often, that even people who value logical thought and conclusions based on the scientific method can become rigid as to what the truth is, what fact is. There was a time when respected scientists poo-pooed the possibility of heavier-than-air flight because, well, if you slow down, you plummet to the earth. Because moving is what keeps you up there. Naysayers became scientific heretics, punished with ridicule for refuting the scientific truth of the day. But again, the heretics worked. Proven right, and they did it at Kitty Hawk in 1903. I have always been someone who liked to do something, to try it just to say I did. In my 20s, I decided I wanted to learn to fly a plane. So I went to this school and talked to the instructor. And he said, okay, why don't we just give you a half-hour flight? You can pay for that, and I'll tell you whether or not you should really do that. So I said, okay, I will. Even though I had never flown a plane in my life, I did not cause it to plummet to the earth. I did not even know I was landing it. I just followed the step-by-step instructions, pulling back on the wheel, doing something with that little thing in the floor, and causing the plane to step down out of the sky. Then switching from the wheel to my feet and steering the plane to a stop. I didn't even know what happened. But science worked. I came down in the plane and I landed the plane. It just happened. Well, I had the help of a very gutsy instructor. But I didn't die. We didn't fall out of the air. Nikola Tesla questioned who invented electricity? Edison, thank you. Mine went blank. Edison was a heretic until he was questioned by Tesla about alternating currents. And he said, Tesla said, hey, that can happen, and it's much more efficient. You won't have to put up as many lines. And Edison said, nah, I know better than you. Who was right? Tesla. Alfred Wegener, who in the early 20th century first put all the data together to propose that the continents were not static, but drifted across the crust of the Earth as a result of plate tectonics. He was roundly derided for such an outlandish idea by the scientific community that was ensconced in the idea that obviously continents don't move. Scientific thought can be as calcified as religious thought. Now, all of this revolutionary thought that's bouncing around in my brain brings me full circle to the relationship between religion and science. As a Unitarian, I reject the ideas of a personal God, a heaven and a hell, a post-death family reunion, and a lot of other things that go along with some forms of religion. But I still feel there is more to me than particles and molecules. So then what am I? What do I think? A real Unitarian or a believer in a soul and heaven and hell? Because I just feel that there is more to me. If I follow this line of inquiry, will my heresy lead me somewhere that I do not want to go? What do I do with this feeling? And how do I marry it to logic? If I investigate further into this feeling that there is more to me than the equations in science, do I have to believe in God? In salvation? In heaven and hell? And the soul? Do I have to really consider going back to that place my inner whatever shivers in fear of that proposition? So what do? I Google. And I entered an immensely exciting world I had no hope of understanding. The world of quantum mechanics, in which even the physicists who reside there No, they don't know what they're doing. But these physicists calmly on YouTube videos, I have watched over and over again late into the night, are saying that they have a theory they have subjected to the scientific method, and they have written papers about it. This growing field of investigation postulates that deep in the quantum mechanical world, in the super, super small, below the threshold of Einsteinian general relativity, it took me a long time to memorize that, but when I say it, I think I'm smart. It kind of goes together, you know. And I know who Einstein is. In that quantum mechanical bizarro world of microtubules, that's what the physicist said, below the neuron and synapse levels of the brain, there's consciousness that happens. Now, this gets even more complicated. I had to look up pictures of it. When the wave function collapses, that's an exciting prospect. I'll never understand it, but there are pictures of it. It has something to do with the wave-particle duality of photons and electrons. Anybody know what that is? Somebody must. I think. And whatever force it is that causes a wave to collapse into particles, that is where the spark of consciousness is born. It springs into being when the wave collapses. And it is connected to the universal consciousness that came into being seconds after the most recent explosion, the most recent Big Bang. All right there, science is keying into that thing in me that I think is there. So now we're cooking. I can dig that. No heavenly family reunion or burning in hell for eternity. After death. Just the contents of quantum mechanical microtubule dwelling entity that I call me. Consciousness to consciousness, stardust to stardust. Such a comforting quasi-religious answer to the mystery of life. And the universe continues on, rebirth after universal rebirth. And I have been a part of it, will continue to be a part of it, as it has been in the beginning, is now, and ever shall be. Universe without end. Scientifically explained, logic validated through heresy. Amen.